Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for stopping by. I am your host, John Naster. And if you've been here before, welcome back. If you haven't been here before, I hope you enjoy what you're about to hear. Today's interview is, it is unique amongst a lot of our interviews, because I kind of go into it, but I mean, lots of our stuff is obviously tech and newer companies. And this person I'm about to talk to and share with you has been in this business since the early 70s, and this particular business just celebrated its 25th anniversary. So the lessons and the stories throughout this, to me, are uniquely profound in that sort of sense of, how should I say it? It's just, it's those longer time horizons I feel can project different and unique perspectives on business, on product, on marketing, and on how sort of we approach evolutionary and revolutionary sort of changes around us and keep our business moving forward. So with all of that said, my guest today is a serial entrepreneur and innovator who has followed her passion and her heart while building several successful businesses. She began her journey in the herbs and herbal tea industry in the early 70s and has designed award-winning herbal beverages for top tea companies around the world. 25 years ago, though, she started a company and set out to create a caffeine-free herbal cappuccino. In this, she created the product Teachino, now the business Teachino. It's also now America's top-selling coffee alternative. Now, let's hack. Caroline McDougall. Right now, as you have probably noticed, the world is changing and businesses are adapting in different ways. So in these uncertain times, how do you make sure marketing gets the results that you need? LinkedIn can help you reach people who are looking for opportunities to help their businesses and can focus your campaigns on the objectives for today. So your marketing just works better. With over 62 million decision makers on LinkedIn, you are able to connect with the right business leaders, people who are there to learn how to be more effective at their jobs and find products to help their companies. LinkedIn marketing can help you build campaigns using objective-based advertising, which allows you to customize the campaign experience based on the action you want your customer to take. Whether you're trying to drive clicks to a website, generate leads, or even generate video views, LinkedIn has the targeting tools that can help you focus on reaching your precise audience down to their job title, company name, location, and more. In fact, you can reach people you already know based on who has visited your site and who you've contacted in the past. Try it for yourself. LinkedIn is offering a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign. Simply visit linkedin.com/hack. Once again, to see how LinkedIn can help you with a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign, go to linkedin.com/hack. linkedin.com/hack. Some terms and conditions apply. And with that said, let's get into the conversation. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest. Caroline, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here and talk to you today.
Oh, me too. I'm really looking forward to this. And yeah, let's just jump straight into the first question.
Go for it.
Excellent. Caroline, as an entrepreneur, I'd like to start here. What is one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
It's interesting. You posed that question and I thought about it. And it's something I've been thinking about all during this period of the pandemic. And that is that since I was a child, get this, I love exploring. And that exploring has taken many forms, right? So as a child, it took the form of exploring out in nature and going out and, finding different places I'd never been before. And for whatever reason, I didn't have much fear of doing that on my own. And then as an adult and in the beginnings of my career, it took the form of going out and looking for botanicals around the world. And I was just super lucky to start my career in my early 20s and to have it be a job that sent me around the world, bringing back herbs for tea here in the United States. And so I did a lot of exploring at that time. There wasn't any set, nobody was importing herbs, so there wasn't anything set about that. So it's kind of fast forwarding into, you know, when I started my company, Ticino, it was the same kind of thing. How can I get herbs that will taste delicious? And so taste has always been a really part of it. I wanted them to taste delicious and I wanted them to be roasted. So I'm caffeine sensitive and I can't drink coffee. And if I do, I sound like a jet airplane, you know, going 90 miles an hour when I talk and that kind of thing. It really doesn't do very well for me. But that it was that thing of exploring taste, exploring where herbs came from, exploring how to get them here to the United States. All of that kind of impetus has been really central to my career.
I love that. And you got to start with bringing in, I guess, herbs and teas and then traveling the world, which is something, I guess, that people do a lot more now. I think, well, not right now, but in 2019 we did. So, but it's interesting because you essentially, I mean, you said importing and how it wasn't really, people weren't importing these things at the time, but you essentially were like an importer, yet you stayed in the tea market the entire time, right?
I did. So just to say a little bit about the history, I started with Celestial Seasonings and we were just a handful of us. We were all in our 20s and this was in the early 70s and we were having this idea to bring the wellness benefits of herbs. As we said it then, we wanted to bring medicinal herbs to the American market. And Americans weren't drinking any herbal teas. There weren't any at all on the shelf. The only tea that you got here at that time was black tea, some form of black tea, but that was it. There was only a handful of tea companies to begin with. You know, there was Lipton's and there was White Rose and there was Bigelow. Bigelow was the up-and-coming new company then. And then Celestial came along. And we put herbal teas into the marketplace in America. And that meant we had to go out and find them. And that was my job. And that sort of, so that sense of exploring started right there. But even for me, it started even earlier because I wanted to know, what did these herbs taste like? I saw a box of strawberry leaves and I thought, wow, I wonder if it tastes like strawberries. And literally, that was when I was 16. I have been tasting herbs ever since. And I'm always picking up a new one and putting them in my mouth.
So that can be good or bad.
And it doesn't have to be discouraging also, because along the way, as I became a tea designer, as I call it, I figured out how to make ones that don't taste so good and taste perfectly fine, because some of the ones that don't taste so good still have really strong wellness benefits. And that's one of the things that we've specialized at Ticino, which is how do we make a tea taste absolutely delicious, or in a case when it's packaged, we also have a what we call our all-purpose grind, which is our herbal coffees. So we have herbal coffees and herbal teas. How do I make them taste delicious? Because nobody's going to drink them if they aren't absolutely fabulous tasting, right? So it's always first and foremost, I have to explore with my taste buds to make sure that I can work with the herb at hand that I really want to feature for its wellness benefits, and that I'm not just what I call fairy dusting it into a tea bag. I'm putting in a significant amount, so that wellness benefit will really be there for the person who's drinking it. So, yeah.
I love it. I love it. So that was with Celestial Seasonings in the early 70s. Ticino was, I'm going to say, mid-90s, 1995 or so, when you started
that. That's correct. We just would have had our 25th anniversary at our big trade show, which would have been in March. Oh. But it got canceled. It was in the first week of March, and it was probably one of the first big conventions to get canceled. But yes, it would have been our 25th. And it's fun because people say often, oh, well, you're 25 years old. That's so old. Well, the companies that I deal with, especially the ones where they're harvesting herbs, right? They're multi-generations. Some of them are 150 years old or more. And so we still feel very young and very entrepreneurial and not old at all, even though we're now the mature age of 25.
Well, congratulations. Even though you didn't get to have it at the trade show still, 25 years is a huge accomplishment. So even though you guys are sort of the young pups in the market, that's still huge, especially, I mean, a lot we lean on this show oftentimes towards tech and stuff. And I mean, 2 years is a really long time for something. So 25 is really, really, really cool. And especially because I'm sure of the evolution of it. But was Ticino, like, just to go back between 75 and 95, is Ticino the first business you started?
No. No, I'm a, what you call a serial entrepreneur. So I had, this is kind of a little list here, but when I lived in Europe, which was in the late 70s, I started another herbal business making, get this, herbal cigarettes, because it was to help people wean themselves off of nicotine, right? So I had an herbal cigarette business. Unfortunately, we ran into tax problems with the EU. We're worried about synthetic tobacco having nicotine in it, and all their taxes were on real tobacco, right, with nicotine in it. And so they made this law, and they outlawed basically, well, they didn't outlaw it, they just taxed all anything that looked like a cigarette. Even at, like, remember, I don't know if you remember, that we used to get these little candy cigarettes. And at any rate, they banned all of that with too many taxes. And that was the end of my herbal cigarette business. And then I had a sort of aberration in my career. I started a technology company. It was a electronics company with a new technology. And that happened in the 80s. And so coming out of that, when I kind of realized, you know, this isn't really my world, I want to go back to my beautiful herbs and my natural foods world. And I want to go back to optimal health, because that's always been my whole purpose, right? That took me back to Ticino. It took me actually first to the rainforest in Central America, and then to Ticino.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So we're... Herbal cigarettes, did other companies exist selling these at the time?
Yes, and one still does, actually. One still survived, and it's still around. And it's funny, there's a little bit of a renaissance now for herbal cigarettes, because people are making them with marijuana in them. So it's still very fledgling, and I don't think I'm going back into it, but I have thought about dusting off those recipes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like, you know, I'm rather usually a bit ahead of my time, but that was really far advanced. We did say at the time that marijuana would have made a great addition if it had been legal.
If it had been legal.
I was living in Amsterdam, so you can imagine.
Oh, so yes, it was, perhaps. Well, I live in Canada, as you know, so it's marijuana is now fully legal across us federally.
Right.
And this, yes, so yes. Seems, well, now it's just sort of normalized, but it still seems weird when I see a new just marijuana store open up down the street. And it's like, wow, that is just something we have now.
Yeah.
But there's, you were at the cutting edge of these things.
I was. Lots of good products in the marijuana world, both for real medicine as well as for just sort of enhancement. But yes, I was at the cutting edge of that. And we had a real professional cigarette machine. We had a filter on it and everything. It was really a beautiful product. But like I say, I haven't quite figured out that I want to go back there at this point.
Yeah.
There's still always tar with smoking, you know, that's the thing. It's hard.
Teas. You could make teas.
But teas, yeah. So, well, you know, on the drawing board.
But it's harder in America, because all the states are different, right? So some are legal, some aren't, some are medical.
We have, at this point, if you want to make a product with marijuana in it, you can only make it for the state in which you live because of the federal rules. And so, yeah, wow. With California's a big market, however, but sure. You can also make a lot of products with hemp, and people are doing that as well. So it's on our drawing board, but we're kind of excited about our latest innovations at the moment. So we haven't gone to that one yet.
Awesome. So mid-90s, and you've been through like the electronics tech business now, and then you've traveled through South America and Central America, and now you want to get back into the tea business, but you want to do it yourself, I'm assuming?
What happened was, I was working with a number of indigenous groups in Central America, and I wanted to use ingredients that they were doing. So I was working with vanilla growers. Vanilla is indigenous to Mexico. That's where it first ever appeared. And it was the Aztecs and the Maya that discovered, and sort of some other tribes down there that at the time, that discovered how to cure a vanilla bean. And vanilla is probably the foremost flavor, any flavors. Chocolate is definitely right in there too. but you know, vanilla is really that extraordinary flavor. It's a single bean. It's an orchid. The plant is an orchid, and it's the only orchid that produces something that is a food crop, which is this the bean. And it has to be cured for 6 months, and it goes through all this stuff. And so I was working with these indigenous people who were relearning to cure the bean like their ancestors had. And I wanted to use that. And so with Ticino, actually, it was inspired by a dream. I was making teas at the time for the Republic of Tea, and I had this dream one night. And in the dream, I heard myself say, the next product I'm going to create is a caffeine-free cappuccino, and the name of the product is Ticino. So I woke up, I went, oh, okay, Ticino, that sounds interesting. And I wondered if I could get herbs to run through an espresso machine. And again, being that sort of explorer nature, I love a new challenge, right? You make it hard, I like it all the more, which is really, you know, whatever. But anyway, I started roasting and grinding various different herbs in my kitchen. And I'd been making herbal teas, as I said, for other companies, a lot of other companies. And herbal teas were much easier to make than Ticino was. I had what I called my 9-month birth process with Ticino, because I had to, once I found the things I liked that were roasted and ground, I had to go out and find people who could supply them in the quantities that I needed. But I was always kept my eye on that thing where I wanted something different and unique. I had already made, in my time, I've made probably over 100 herbal teas for other companies. I didn't want to go out and compete with teas that I had made for somebody else that was on the shelf, right? So I wanted to carve out that unique niche. And there was nowhere that you could get something that would brew like coffee and taste like coffee. And that was my very first target. I wanted something that I could make a caffeine-free cappuccino out of, right? And there was coffee bars all over the place, and I couldn't drink anything out of any of them. And so I started Ticino for that. But in the end of the day, I realized that I had created more than just herbal coffee. And I had this platform of this, you know, really delicious roasted background, but I could take it into the tea realm as well. So I went from being an herbal tea designer to getting totally into coffee and how you brew coffee and everything you do with it and the fun of espresso machines and all that kind of great stuff. And then I went back to, hey, you know what? A tea bag's really convenient, but I need a little different tea bag than anybody else has because I've got to have that full-bodied flavor. I don't want it watery like regular tea. So I got myself a large tea bag. And so in Ticino's tea bags, we have 6 grams of ingredients of our herbs, whereas a normal tea bag has about 1.5 grams. So we have what we call maximum wellness benefit from our tea bags. And that allows us also to give you that delicious flavor and to deliver those herbs that don't taste so good still in a quantity that you need in order to have their wellness benefits.
Wow. Caroline, you don't like to take the easy route, do you?
I know. It's a hard challenge, you know. So, I'm a Capricorn. We go to the highest mountains, right? We like to climb those mountains.
I mean, there's so many steps in there with starting Ticino that you could have like just taken a route you've already figured out and just like capitalized on it. But like, no, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want, and you just, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating way to, I mean, to live in general and then to like create successful businesses around that philosophy.
You know, I've often thought if I just would have started a tea company, it would have been a whole lot easier and I probably would have made a lot more money. But you know what? What can I say? I've really enjoyed what I've done. And our company value, which is you can kind of hear from everything I've talked about. I've been into natural foods. I've been into the herbal tea movement and the herbal beverage movement, herbal products movement since the 70s. And so when I started Ticino and having had other companies like that technology company, I mean, we raised tens of millions of dollars for it and I lost all kinds of control of that company early on, right? I mean, it went public, it did everything. I wanted to have a company that I could grow it organically and really stay with my values. I wanted to stay with optimal health. I wanted every product to deliver the best, healthiest beverage that you could put in a cup, right? and I didn't want to compromise that. Thank you very much.
And you didn't.
I didn't want anybody telling me I had to because it would make my cost of goods sold go down or whatever, you know?
You just ignored it.
I took a slower route. You know, I grew the company organically rather than a lot of people these days. They go out, they raise lots of money, they have a success, and then the next thing they know, they've lost control of their company and they're out. And then the company doesn't do the same. I mean, look at what happened with Odwalla. They just killed Odwalla, and it started out as a juice company, not a fruit smoothie company. And now Coca-Cola said, tough luck. Goodbye, Odwalla. And I knew that company in its early days. I knew its founders. I knew their values. So I wanted to stay with those values. So I allowed Ticino to grow more slowly and to keep with its original mission.
Yeah. I love it. And I mean, I love that you had the tech company that had got funded and then everything changed. And so you've done both. And so you can see it from both sides of the fence. It's not just like an outside perspective of that doesn't look fun or what I want to do, which is fascinating.
And I've seen it happen to brands in our business. So we are at the moment a family-run company. We're not the only owners. I do have some outside investors, but they're what I would call the patient type. Very patient, we should say. But my son, who was 6 years old when I started Ticino, is now running our sales. He's my VP of sales. And he's grown up with the business. You know, he went to his first trade shows when he was 10. And he started selling at 10, too. He would stand at the table and sell rather than go and play with his friends. You know? And so it's in his DNA, what can I say? And, you know, nobody ever knows what the future will bring. And so I can't make any promises that I'll be here 50 years from now saying the same kinds of things. Well, I guess I won't be here 50 years from now unless I find it. Yeah. But you know what I'm trying to say.
I do. So from this idea in the mid-90s, to create a cappuccino that didn't have caffeine, something that like a coffee alternative that hadn't been done. You've since become the number one brand of coffee alternatives in the United States of America. It's 25 years later. You just got to celebrate that. But I want to know, like, what was your like vision of it? Like, could you picture today, 25 years ago, and be like, that's where we're heading? Or was it sort of a shorter time frame?
Well, I think, you know, 25 years ago, like I said, I was just trying to replicate the taste of coffee. And I worked really hard at that. And I found, talk about exploring, I found a tree in Central America. And this was actually after the period when I was down there a lot. I found it later on. I heard about it when I was down there, but I developed it later on for Ticino. And that tree has a seed. And the Maya used to roast the seed and drink a roasted beverage out of it, right? So that allowed me, that seed is an amazing seed. It's called the Ramon seed. And we harvest that now in the Maya Biosphere Reserve. And that's a harvest that we pioneered. Talk about things that are hard that I decided to take on. That one was not easy. But what I would say is that allowed me to really complete that thing of now I have these flavors that really taste like coffee. I could hit the person who wants just a plain flavor that just is bitter like coffee. And then I also added to other of our blends, I added dates and figs to make them a little sweet for people who want to sweeten their coffee, but maybe it allows them to back off of sugar so that they can just have it be sweet enough without any sweetener in there. It's healthier for them. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And then I went, you know, I want to flap my wings a little bit and get back to some of the herbs that don't taste exactly like coffee. And so I'd done that with my dandelion blends where we put in roasted dandelion, but we put in a lot of other super herbs like turmeric, even peppermint. That's not something you would normally find in a coffee-like beverage, right? So mm-hmm. I went further afield, but we always kept our roasted background. And now we've just come out with two new lines, and one of them has mushroom extracts in it, along with adaptogenic herbs. And neither of those things taste like coffee. But because of the way I can blend with my roasted ingredients, I still have that roasted background. So I still have that full body, what we call that really satisfying, rich, and we also say a lot, bold flavor, right? We try and differentiate ourselves. Well, we are differentiated. I shouldn't say we try, because we do have bold roasted flavor and nobody else in the tea world does. So that my always keeping with that sort of base of what Ticino is, but expanding into all these other realms where I make it spicy or I make it fruity. We have mango lemon balm now, which is one of my new prebiotic flavors that has this. Do you know what a prebiotic is, John?
I mean, I know what a probiotic is, and it's something before that.
It's pro. It's pre the pro, right?
Exactly.
You know, a prebiotic is actually the substance that nourishes your probiotics. So your probiotics either eat them or they use them, one or the other. And those are called prebiotics, and they make your probiotics thrive. And I'm sure you've heard you have a community of microorganisms in your gut. And we get prebiotics from our food, but there are some really great concentrated prebiotics. And so Ticino, all of Ticino's blends are prebiotic because chicory root is one of those foods that has the highest amount of inulin, which is a prebiotic in it. And you can get inulin from wheat and garlic and, you know, various other things you eat, but you don't get nearly as much as you get from chicory. So a cup of Ticino is always prebiotic. But then I, of course, decided that the prebiotics are so good for us that I should try these concentrates. And I put in two different concentrates of prebiotics in Ticino. And so now we have new blends that have this effect of really benefiting our microbiome, the gut, that flora, that we need to be healthy. So yeah, I kind of, like I say, I flapped my wings and I expanded more into that realm of, well, it doesn't have to taste just like coffee, but it is still going to have that really full-bodied flavor to it.
Right, right. And so one of the foundations of the company, Caroline, is innovation. It's where you started, and you were physically doing the innovating. I mean, back from the 70s until when you started this, and innovation is obviously essential to your business and the market that it's in now. But like thinking of like not just like a slight variation, but like the mushroom adaptogen, like it's a whole new sort of product line. How do you, like, are you as the CEO still doing the innovation, or have you somehow like just like baked it into the foundation of the company?
No, I do it still. It's still always my inspiration because, wow. You know, again, that part of the explorer in me that's dedicated to optimal wellness, right? I'm always looking at the frontier of what wellness ingredients are out there that are being discovered. And mushrooms are newer to the American market. Adaptogenic herbs, however, not only were they used for thousands of years elsewhere, like in China and India, but we've had them around since the 70s. It's funny for me because I was working with adaptogenic herbs in the 70s, importing them. I've got a great story, but I won't bother you with it right now. Breaking a Russian stranglehold with the Chinese and importing an herb that the Russians only were trying to control and have a monopoly on. You know, and that was an adaptogenic herb called Eleuthero. So I've been working with adaptogens since then and known about them and been a big proponent of them. But now, what's so exciting for me about now is that the time has kind of caught up to me. And now all kinds of people are writing about adaptogens, coming out with products that have adaptogens in them. And consumers are starting to know, wow, I want some of those adaptogens, right? And so that's really exciting for me. And that enabled me to say, okay, now it's time for Ticino. Because we've had an uphill battle educating people. And now lots of people are helping educate our customers, and everybody's out there thinking about optimal health in this time of the pandemic. And so all of us are working on it together, and that's fantastic. And adaptogens are now the mushrooms and herbs of the moment. And that makes them a really exciting place for us to be. And of course, you have to go out and source ones, and you have to find out what's really real and what are the best. And that is something I love to do. So I found the best extracts from the fruiting bodies of mushrooms. I even included some mycelium because I got convinced by the science that there's important benefits to the mycelium, by the way, is like the roots of a tree, right? Mm-hmm. It's also called the wood network rather than the worldwide network, right? It's the wood network of what's underneath our feet. You know, it's the mycelium that is the internet of the soil, shall we say, connecting all the trees. So there was good science about the mycelium, but some people are just using mycelium. And frankly, there's most all the science about mushrooms is on fruiting bodies. And so I decided to include both, and I found suppliers for both and, you know, all that kind of thing. So now that's still what I do.
Is there anybody, either yourself or within the company, that wants to stop you in this process and do some sort of market research to make sure that people will buy this first? You're just all product and what the benefits, which is amazing. But it's never like, Well, I don't know. You're like, we have to educate people for them to buy it. Lots of people want to avoid things where you have to educate people first.
I know. I would have made a lot more money if I just would have made some herbal teas with chamomile and hibiscus and peppermint, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I know. Well, it just wasn't the purpose that the company was founded on. That's all I can say. We're all about optimal health. And certainly chamomile, peppermint, and hibiscus are optimal health ingredients. I'm not saying they aren't. But in exploring that frontier, I just have gone a little bit further afield, shall we say.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, it's such an exciting time period. And nobody in the company has said no to me, maybe because I'm still the CEO. But I do have a great team. And my, you know, I have to say, my son, as I said, he's the VP of sales. You know, he's first and foremost. He doesn't at all hesitate from saying no. He's not a son who's a yes son. I didn't raise that type. I had three of them and none of them say yes, right?
Wow.
Not to me, no. They do say yes sometimes. But most of the time, we have a family that loves debate. And let me tell you, the debates can be heated. And yet we're all strong debaters. So that's good.
That is good. That is
and,
good.
And so we look and we, you know, and we assess things and we feel the pulse and constraints of capital is really what says no to you more than anything else.
Right. And I mean, so in 25 years, there's been obviously just a lot of like evolutionary sort of changes in markets, in what people want in health industry, plus like some revolutionary changes that have happened as well. So e-commerce is one of them. E-commerce wasn't really a thing at all in 1995, but now you have a full-fledged e-commerce platform and store part of Ticino. Were you guys like early adopters of that as well? Or was this something that you've sort of just adopted in the last couple of years?
I had my first website built in 1998. Wow. I mean, it wasn't anything to get too excited about, let's say.
No.
I did have it. And one of the reasons was, you know, the naivety of a young entrepreneur, right? When I got a little bit of money, I had some investors, I got a little tiny bit of money. I immediately went out and did an ad campaign and I got a terrific response to the ad campaign, but I didn't have product anywhere on the shelf. Well, I had it a few places, but not nearly enough for, you know, a national ad campaign. It was in a health magazine, but nevertheless. So I had to find a way to respond to people really quickly and people wanted to buy, you know, samples. We had the little trial size packets and things like that people could buy. So that early website, we didn't actually sell off of it, but I think we took like people's names and addresses, that kind of thing, and then we fulfilled, right? And so that was probably the first use of the e-commerce platform. So I've had websites all along ever since 1998, but having said that, we're still in the process of building and rebuilding our website. And, you know, I suppose everybody is, but it feels like I've never had the website of my dreams yet.
Oh, yeah. That's an ongoing process.
It's a humbling process indeed. But really now, with the growth of people's confidence of buying online, and whether it's from our website or it's from Amazon or it's from one of our other e-tailer partners, and we do have, you know, a number of good ones, wherever it is that they choose to buy, they can find this great assortment of flavors and of blends that we have. So we have 36 blends now. And we have 5 different families of blends. You heard me mention, you know, the dandelion and the mushroom adaptogen and the prebiotic super boost. And we also have the Maya and the Mediterranean, right? So we have, you know, all these flavors and I can't get them on a retail shelf. Not all of them anyway. I can get some of them, but a very, you know, a small sampling of them, shall we say. So we encourage people to look online and then look at all that we have to offer because it's, you know, it's pretty exciting if you ask me.
Yeah. So, I mean, has that part of the business gotten easier in the fact that you can start a new product line now and you can get it? Well, you could sell it yourself if you want, or you could sell it via Amazon. You don't have to worry about Whole Foods picking it up necessarily for it to succeed.
That's exactly correct. And is that ever a relief after, you know, 25 years? And well, it wasn't all 25 of them, but it was a good 20 of them banging my head against that wall. Ticino is in Whole Foods, mind you. They still haven't quite figured out that our herbal teas belong in the tea set, but they're getting there slowly but surely, we hope.
One day.
But on Amazon, you're right. So I have, when I went to do my mushroom adaptogen teas, right? and they also are actually are in the filter grind, so they're herbal coffees as well. But when I went to do them, I went, well, I can put all these mushrooms all together in the same product. And a number of companies have done that. You know, you pick up a package that says, wow, it has lion's mane and cordyceps and chaga and reishi, and, you know, it's all in here. But then if you look at the actual dosage of each one, it's not very significant. So I decided that I would pair a mushroom with a adaptogenic herb, right? So we'd have the sort of double adaptogenic strength, right? A mushroom and an herb together. And so I paired, for instance, reishi with Eleuthero, because they've been around the longest as they're as standing as the adaptogens of their categories, right? And they actually complement each other in terms of energy production and immunity and all of this kind of thing. And then I paired lion's mane with rhodiola because lion's mane is known for enhancing cognitive health, and so is rhodiola. And rhodiola is a root that grows in Siberia and is an adaptogenic herb, and it has lots of other health benefits besides. But again, I paired them together. And by doing that and making six teas instead of just one, I was able to have them have the significant dose. I've got over a gram of each of those adaptogenic herbs, and I've got, you know, 500 milligrams of each of those adaptogenic mushrooms in my products, right? So in each one. So you get that in a cup, right? When you sit down to drink a cup of Ticino, it's a little less than a tea bag, but that's what it is if you sat down and brewed it in your drip coffee maker or your French press or what have you. And so, yeah, I said, well, I'm just going to do six of them. Now, if it was just the retail shelf, I would have said, oh, I just better do one. And if I only do one, how am I going to get a significant amount of each of these wonderful herbs and mushrooms in it? Yeah, so. That's the liberation of being online and having a good e-tailer presence.
Yeah, it makes it, I mean, it's any of those sorts of limits that were on you before have now been removed. So you get even more freedom to be creative.
That is exactly right. And I'm going to repeat that for my son. When he starts talking to me about SKU rationalization is the buzzword right now in COVID. SKU rationalization, cut down on your number of SKUs, you know. Oh, wow. A SKU is a product, right? Yeah. And I'm saying, no, now that might be true for bricks and mortar, but that's not true for my world of e-commerce, and I'm not going to do that.
Exactly. And so you briefly mentioned it, but has COVID like positively helped you because of the health benefits in that market?
Know, and I sort of, you know, hate to say it, but yes, it has been good for our company, you know, and I know it's been so terrible for people all over the world, and you know, it breaks my heart to think about its devastating effects. But in the case of the food and beverage industry, people are at home and they're eating and drinking at home. And thus, if you weren't big in food service, and we aren't, there isn't an herbal tea in the country that's big in food service. So if you're not big in food service, you know, then you don't miss that market going away when they shut down the restaurants and the, you know, coffee bars. But on the other hand, people are drinking at home, so they're looking for new experiences, and they're also thinking about their health, and they're thinking about their immunity, and so they're looking for the herbs which will enhance that. And yes, we've had tremendous sales as a result.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, I've found it fascinating just the different businesses and how they're all affected differently by this. Obviously, like as a society, we're affected negatively in this, and I agree, and people all over the world, but it's fascinating to me the businesses, and some of them I wouldn't expect have done really well or else been affected really negatively, but it's interesting. It's interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, who would have thought that all the plant stores would sell out of all their seeds and their starts in the spring? This came on
exactly.
Right, and everybody like me said, oh my God, let's get our garden going. We're at home.
Exactly. And those are some positives we've had, I guess.
I hear home materials, you know, for projects have also been selling like crazy. So the hardware stores have done well.
Exactly. So just everyone's sort of, yeah, hit or miss, I guess, the way it is.
Yeah, there's always the silver lining in the dark cloud, and it's certainly been a dark cloud, but I think a lot of people have rediscovered the benefit of being at home, the benefit of being of having maybe more time, and so, yeah, it has changed our lives. There's just no question about that.
It has. There's no going back, I don't think, to exactly how it was. So Caroline, this has been a fascinating conversation. I've truly, truly enjoyed being part of. I would love to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure.
So it's this idea I'm working with. As I said, I've interviewed now just over 500 people. I've been doing this for many years. And I've worked out this idea called the entrepreneurial gap. It seems to be this place we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, where no matter what we accomplish professionally, we never seem to see ourselves as successful. From the outside, everybody else can see you and just sit in awe of what you're accomplishing. But you and I probably both know that, like, as you're about to hit a goal, you're going to set bigger, loftier ones into the future. And to a certain degree, I agree with that we need to do that. That's how we innovate and push ahead. But I also think that sometimes we need to look back. So I'd love it if you could stop right now and just turn around and look behind you. I mean, since the early 70s, you've been in the tea and herb game, and it's evolved through technology and now to 25 years of Tea Chino, which you just got to celebrate. But I would love it if you could just tell me, how do you feel about this entire journey up until today?
Oh, I've loved my career, and I didn't choose it. It kind of chose me by a lot of, you know, happenstance and various things, but by my own passion and my interest in botanicals and wellness. So I have to tell you that I feel really wonderful about it. But here's the thing, which is the rub, which is what you're talking about, the part where we say, yeah, we don't feel successful enough, right? And that is, I'm in the food and beverage industry. And I would tell you that, you know, I started out with natural foods as a passion. I first started reading about them in the, you know, early 70s, or the late 60s even. I read about, you know, articles like how to make brown rice. That was fascinating to me, right? You know, nobody knew how to make brown rice. We'd only ever seen Uncle Ben's white rice, you know? So how to make brown rice was a revolutionary kind of article at the time. So I was totally into that. And my passion was about bringing optimal health to the world, bringing the wellness benefits of herbs to people's cups and all of that. And I would tell you that, yes, I've been successful in that. And so along with a lot of other people, we all pioneered this together as an industry. And at the same time, I have to say there has been, it brings so much emotion to me, but there's been an equal and maybe greater growth of terrible agricultural practices that are bad for our planet, of the growth of the fast food industry, which is bad for our health, of the devastation of our environment that has happened all along the way, the loss of wild habitat, which is where a lot of our herbs are harvested. And I can go on and on. All of that has happened also. And then, of course, it brings us to climate change and the tremendous devastating effects that climate change is having now and will have during the course of the rest of my life and my children's and my grandchildren's life. And hopefully we even exist after that, right? So I still feel that we haven't accomplished nearly what we need to. That's what it comes down to. And so, yes, look, every little step that we take, each one of us individually, is so important and so essential, and we all need to take those steps forward. And I don't care if it's whether you finally start recycling or you finally plant a garden or whatever it is, all of those are really important steps. And yet, as a collective community of human beings on this planet, we have not taken the steps we need to take together in a coordinated way to preserve life on this planet. And that is what makes me still get up every morning and go to work and try and bring out a healthier cup and try and educate people about what health is. Because if they think about their own health, they will also start to think about the health of the planet. If they think about the health of the planet, they will start to look around. And I think COVID has made people look around a lot because our skies have been clear and everything has felt healthier in a certain way as we look out. And I think we're going to change. But that change hasn't come yet. And so I'm in my 60s and I'm as passionate now, probably even more so than I was in my 40s, about making change happen today.
That's a beautiful answer. Thank you for that. And I mean, you're not just awareness, but the fact that you take your company as part of the whole of just like civilization and sort of your place in it, to me seems to be also why you've had the success you've had, because it's so true and just genuine. That's you. And then you get to sell it cup by cup to people and they can share it and hopefully spread that a little bit, which does help the world.
You know, we use the lid of the inside of our tea bag boxes, right? There's we can print the inside of the lid and we use it to talk about NGOs nonprofit organizations, right, that are doing great environmental work. Mostly it's environment. Some of them are doing really good human work with people like Vitamin Angels, work with mothers and their nutrition and young children and their nutrition around the world. So we have a number of NGOs, and I encourage anybody who buys our teas to open up that lid and read about one of the NGOs that we feature there. We have, a dozen or more of them. I've lost count. But they're all ones we really feel that are important, and we do fundraising for them on our website as well. And they're ones that are unique, maybe not the big national environmental groups. They're the smaller ones that might be working in a particular area or something like that. So we do try and use our platform and our voice to further educate people about wonderful things that other people are doing to protect life on this planet.
I love it. I love it. And I recommend everybody out there listening to definitely try some Ticino. You can go straight to ticino.com, or you can get it, as Caroline said, basically, I think any of the big stores online that you would buy stuff, or probably even a lot of your local stores at this point. But yeah, I recommend you try it out. And probably lots of you already have tried it, because you're definitely not an underground sensation at this point, Caroline.
Yeah, if you haven't tried Ticino, you may have drank one of my other teas for one of the other companies I've designed for. So.
Exactly. So once again, thank you so much for stopping by. I truly, truly appreciate it. Thanks for sharing so openly with us. And just keep doing what you're doing, Caroline, because it is really awesome to watch.
Well, thank you so much for giving me the ability to talk about what I do and to share it with other people. That's one of also the great things happening now is we're all, I think, listening to each other more. And that's a blessing.
I agree. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. I truly enjoyed that conversation, and I hope that you enjoyed it nearly as much as I did. As I said previously, I really appreciated that, the different perspective than we often get on the show. And yeah, I hope that you sort of gleaned some insights in a different way from it as well, especially the passion behind the product that Caroline created and the way she's been successful literally just by following that passion rather than following the marketplace. And to me, that's fascinating. And I think that a lot of us could probably do better in our businesses if we also follow this, even if you are in a tech space or software space or something different than herbal teas. But yeah, I enjoyed it, and I hope you did as well. So hacktheentrepreneur.com, it's the site. You can head over there. Caroline's episode will be over there. I'll find some social media of her and Ticino, but as we said, you can find that anywhere you want online as well. And yeah, I hope you're doing well out there. 2020, it's been a eventful year so far. It's summer, and I hope you're doing well. I hope you're thriving and having a good time. And I just hope you maybe join us next time. But until then, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.